And I think we have now accomplished that, Mr. Nix. So good morning again to you, and you may proceed.
Good morning again to you, and Happy New Year to the court as well. And please, the court, my name is Jeffrey Nix. I represent the appellant and defendant Pinecrest Homes. I would like to reserve 2 minutes on rebuttal, if I may. This case originates from an appeal from a lower court's ruling granting the plaintiffs adverse possession of a strip of residential land. Plaintiffs acquired their residential property in the form of a lot in 2001 in a platted subdivision called Stone Creek. In 2005, my client purchased the property immediately to the north adjacent to that through his business Birchwood Homes. So that was in 2005. In 2013, my client, Mr. Torrezon, transferred that property to his other business called Pinecrest Homes. So the disputed property concerns the southern strip of land in my client's property, again, immediately adjacent to the plaintiffs. I think it's important to note that the purpose of platted subdivisions is to maintain specific lot sizes in residential communities that help to ensure utility easements and also that respect setback requirements, that those are maintained.
Counsel, a good portion of your brief asserts sort of a public policy argument that the doctrine of adverse possession should apply differently in platted subdivisions than it does elsewhere.
That's something that is suggested. That is correct.
Do you have any authority for that proposition?
I don't. I did an extensive research on that. I do not have authority that I can specifically cite you.
And didn't we hold in Wahana versus Long that there was no reason to apply the adverse possession any differently in a platted subdivision than elsewhere?
I didn't read the court as saying that specifically. I view that case as distinguishable on the facts. In Wana, the previous owners of the defendant's property put up a fence, which was there for a number of years.
Along the sod line?
Near the sod line, as I understand it, which was short of the actual boundary. The evidence in that case showed a period of time of mutual acquiescence to that, as well as a clearly marked, delineated division by way of that fence.
But mutual acquiescence isn't an element of adverse possession, is it?
Well, it goes, I think, to the issue of the exclusivity of the use of the property. Because keep in mind, of course, that one of the elements in adverse possession is exclusive. In this case, for example, I remember asking Mr. Poulos, I said to Mr. Poulos, could other people use the land? Could kids walk through the disputed property in question? He said, sure. As far as I know, that could have happened. There was no indication by Mr. Poulos that he was attempting to make this an exclusive use of the land.
Could you distinguish our case of Waha by pronouncing that correctly?
I believe it's Wana versus
Wana.
Long, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Yes,
please.
How do I distinguish it?
Yeah.
I distinguish it because, as I say, I believe that in the Wana case, there was a showing of exclusive use of the property and also a clear area that was delineated by the fence. We don't have that in this case.
Was there a sidewalk also in that case?
Your Honor, I'm sorry. Okay. That I don't
That's
recall.
Fine. Go ahead.
I don't recall that. Plaintiff's witness testified that underground sprinklers in the disputed area had to be turned on in order for their surveyors to perform the legal description of this property. My client, who has owned the property initially under his first company and then under his later, for a period of 8 years, testified that when I or my agents inspected this area, there was nothing unusual that indicated to me that there was any adverse claim. He also testified, too, that in these platted subdivisions, and that Wana never got to this, that we typically see these poorly delineated areas of grass, rock, rubble, that do not indicate any kind of exclusive claim. The plaintiff, of course, never posted any sign to warn or indicate any adverse use. And as I mentioned just a minute ago, testified that the property could have been used, possessed or trampled on by students and other people who lived in the area.
Does the record tell us whether this underground sprinkler system was entirely underground, in other words, flush with the surface of the ground and below? And if it does tell us anything about that, does it also tell us when this sprinkler system was operated? In the middle of the night, during the day? What do we know from the record?
My recollection is that Mr. Poulos indicated that he used the sprinklers periodically during the times of the year when it was required. I believe that's what he said.
So we don't know whether he sprinkled on a, had one of these that comes on at 3 o'clock in the morning automatically, or comes on at 12 noon automatically, or that he has to turn it on manually from time to, we simply don't know.
I believe there was some testimony about it being on an automatic system, but I don't remember that it went into that much detail. I just don't recall that, Your Honor. Sorry.
Did the plaintiff know where the platted line for the property was?
No. The evidence in the case was that he never had that area surveyed and made sure that he knew what was his and what was the property of the other owners. So that was never done.
Would the sprinkler fact go to whether or not this was notorious?
I think again, the problem is that the plaintiff conceded a lack of exclusivity of the use of the property. He didn't indicate I was trying to make a statement by any of my actions that I had exclusive control over this property. Again, I asked him point blank, could other people walk on there and use it for any purpose they want, such as kids walking, cutting across through school? He said, sure.
So you think that's the element that was failed to have been established?
Yes, I do.
What about claim of right?
I think there's also that problem, too. There was testimony over and over again about an alleged mow line. The plaintiff tried to use that, but we had evidence that our surveyor went out to this property to perform his own legal description and analysis. He saw no mow line that was created. Exhibit 16 was a purported drawing that showed a very straight line that was connected by the sprinklers. And my surveyor said that and testified, I don't see any kind of clear line. The sprinklers, when they're not used, are underground and don't support the legal description that the plaintiffs offered in the case.
You're not suggesting that the photos didn't show a clear demarcation between the sod line and the undeveloped adjacent lot?
What I'm arguing about, I think you're referring now to what are referred technically to as the ortho-rectified pictures from the Douglas County, which were aerial photographs. The problem I have with that is that they don't give you any kind of detail. It's an aerial view. It still doesn't tell us precisely where that line allegedly is supposed to be.
Weren't there other photos in addition to the aerial photos that depicted the distinct line between the sod and the undeveloped adjacent lot?
There were some, yes. Yeah. And so, looks like I'm out of time. So I'm requesting on behalf of my client that this court, in its own de novo review of this matter, reverse the ruling of the district court and find that my client has and should have retained the rightful possession and use of the property. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bowler, good morning.
Good morning. Justice, Mr. Nixon. My brief, I think, in very much detail sets out how we comply with all the elements required to establish title by adverse possession. There was actual possession. This is a residential area. That's an important factor from the case law.
Actual possession in the sense of water?
Actual possession in the sense of when they acquired this property in November of 2001, the sod was already installed. The sprinkler system was already installed. They continued to maintain the property as the rest of the whole lot as one continuous piece of ground. If you look at it, and you can see from the ortho-rectified photos, that it is consistent. It all ties in together. It looks like a lot. It looks like the lot.
And yet, the court's decree and your claim doesn't extend to the full extent of those photographs. It only extends
and that the court awarded only to where the sprinkler heads are.
That's right, Your Honor.
So that's the mow line goes beyond, and yet you're not claiming the full extent of where the mow line would be, correct?
We're not claiming the full extent of the mow line. We're claiming to, in the mow line, wasn't really talked about as being a specific area. We are claiming up to the point where the sprinkler was installed, that's the line. And that's where the sod was installed as well.
Let me ask you some of the questions I asked your opponent about what the record tells us about the sprinkler system.
Yes, sir.
Is it totally underground?
It is. It's a regularly installed rain bird system.
Someone who drives by is not going to see a sprinkler driving by.
When it's running, they do.
Okay. Well, they'll see water.
Yes, sir.
They're going to see, if it's in operation, would someone driving by or walking by on the sidewalk see something sticking up above the surface of the ground?
Certainly. This was I believe it was a rainbird system, and it does pop up. That's how it works.
But do we know from the record what kind of rain? In other words, is it one of these, from years of experience, I know some of them pop up about 3 inches, and then there are some that pop up 6 or 8 inches, and it may make a difference. Do we know any of that from the record?
Your Honor, there is Exhibit 28, which are the rainbird instructions, and that was admitted into evidence, and I think that would address that issue and be part of the record. Other than that particular exhibit, there isn't anything that would say how far up.
What about the time of operation? Does the record tell us anything about that?
I don't believe it does.
We don't know if it was automatic in the middle of the night when nobody would be around to see it?
I don't believe the record addresses that.
Okay.
Now, what does happen, though, is there is a sidewalk that was installed, again, before my clients acquired the property. I think that they can tack what they've acquired to what the original contractor built. He sent somebody out. I think you can call the underground water system a structure, as some cases do. The sod was a landscaping item that was further recognized by the court as being, in past cases, as being something that indicates your control over the property and your intent to make it your own. That line also extends the line that the district court gave us title to, running through the sprinklers, also extends where the sidewalk had been installed, and leaving the impression that the property line goes up to where that particular sidewalk ended.
Wasn't the big fact in WANA the fact that there was a fence built, and was there a fence built in this case?
There was no fence built in this case, Your Honor. And the fence, as I understand it, the fence in WANA wasn't even on the correct property line. It was set back somewhat from the property line. I think in many ways, this case is stronger than WANA. There wasn't anything that I could see in my reading of WANA that would indicate whether or not there was even an underground sprinkler system installed. But that was a factor that the court found in WANA, saying that this was an exercise of dominion and control that was notorious in such a way that it put people on notice of the fact that they were claiming title by adverse possession.
Let's talk about policy for just a second.
Certainly.
Imagine one of these old oscillating sprinklers that went back and forth, and it's sitting on a property line going back and forth. Is someone, the owner of the sprinkler is watering his own lawn, but he's also watering the neighbors. Is the neighbor on notice that his neighbor, that another guy is claiming ownership of this stretch that's being watered by the sprinkler on the border?
I think in this particular case, under these facts, where the adjoining property, Mr. Nix's client's property, was just bare ground, no grass, nothing. I think in this case, that it does clearly indicate, it puts people on notice of the fact that you're claiming title. And that's...
Suppose there was no physical encroachment, but we had a sloping ground, and the water runs off your clients onto the neighbors, And again, you have a strip that's green and the rest of it's brown and a vacant lot. Is that enough to put someone on notice that there's a claim of ownership?
I don't think so, Your Honor.
And but there were... what is it about your facts that you think is sufficient to put them on notice, not just that somebody was watering it, but that they were claiming ownership of it?
Sidewalk goes up that line. The sod that was installed, exhibit number 8, are the appraisal photos that show in 2001 when they purchased the property, a clear line where the sod was.
Are you likening this to cultivation in a less urban setting?
Cultivation, I think, implies that you're pulling something off the ground. It's a money-making enterprise. It's a crop, something like that.
I'm trying to suggest working the land.
Well, my client testified as to how he mowed that property is himself. He mowed it with a push mower. He certainly felt that he was working the land. He certainly felt he was maintaining what he considered to be and had always thought was his property. He fertilized it. He weeded it. And it just hit his own, the defendant's own expert, in looking at the photos, admitted that there was a clear delineation between what my client claimed as under adverse possession and the remainder of the defendant's lot.
Counsel, how wide is the wedge shape and how long is it?
At the widest point, it's about 9.9 feet 9 inches.
And where does that start? At the sidewalk or the front of the lot or the back of the lot?
That's at the front of the lot.
So it's 9 feet over, so when the property was purchased, it was originally oversodded by the sod people, and then the sprinkling system people came in and just put the system in without regard to knowing the boundary lines?
I don't know which occurred first, but the sidewalk was in as well. So all those things, before my client bought the property, more than 10 years ago, those things were all in place.
Did your client know where the platted line was?
He made the assumption it was where the sod was, where the sprinkler system was, where the sidewalk was. I don't think that intent is a factor in this as far as malintent or I'm trying to take property or anything else. Any other questions?
And how does this affect the lot's value? Does it diminish the value of the lot because you own a little more of the property, your client owns a little more of the property?
Your Honor, what actually the actual effect is, and this was in the record, it left Mr. Nix's client with more front footage than my client had after he acquired his interest by adverse possession. So it's still wider. The home has been completed on the defendant's property. My understanding is after the time of the trial, it's been sold, it's now occupied. It's not unusable. It's completely usable. And I think that's another consideration if we're talking about policy. We notified immediately when the construction started that they were over on our property. They could have moved the property. They could have repositioned the home. There's no indication that there wasn't sufficient setbacks. So I don't think that there's any policy considerations. And as far back as 1891, as Juan indicated, there's no reason to distinguish urban platted areas when we're looking at adverse possession claims.
I know you're out of time. I have one more question. I understood you to say that Pinecrest Homes no longer owns the adjacent lot, that they built the home on it, and that they have now sold it to a third party. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
That occurred during the pendency of this appeal?
It may have. I think that's taking place.
What impact, if any, does that have on our appeal?
Well, there may be a question of real party of interest, but I think that's where...
Is any of that in the record?
No, sir. It is not. This occurred after the time of the trial, and Well, that's not in the record.
Thank you.
Nobody's attempted to claim that the appeal is moot?
No.
And you're not asserting that?
I would if you guessed that I do so. it's a very good idea.
You haven't. No one's filed an affidavit making such an assertion.
Not at this point.
Okay. This might be the end of the road for that.
The right to claim that?
I don't know. That's up to you all.
May make an oral motion to suggest it may be moot at this point if the property has been.
I think we ought to give the other party a chance.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
We have a minute.
We have a minute and 38 seconds. Mr. Nix.
Your Honor, I cannot verify on the sale, though the disputed section of property is still at issue. The disputed property would not have been sold. One other thing I would make a comment on based on the statement by counsel just a minute ago. We're not claiming the full extent of the mow line. Well, now we've got a legal description problem. In looking at the evidence, it was clear that the legal description that was used to formulate or create the court's ruling was based on that mow line. We had testimony that showed that there was, if they're going to claim something other than the mow line, it would be a jagged line, and that would require a completely different legal description.
Wasn't the legal description based on the straight line of the underground sprinkler because that was a straight line?
That's my understanding, but it's my understanding from counsel that they're not claiming the full extent of that area. I just heard that statement a few minutes ago by counsel.
I'm confused by mow line and the underground sprinkler line, and I just want to be sure I understand what you're saying.
I'm using the same thing. I should have made that more clear.
Do you have a claim that the legal description that was entered by the court is in error?
I do. I
beg your pardon. If adverse possession were upheld, nevertheless, the description would be in error?
Correct, and that's the purpose of my making the statement I just did. That's the second assignment of error.
And to be clear, the assignment of error is that they weren't claiming as much as they could have.
Well, that it doesn't, that the description does not fit the physical reality. And now, if the plaintiff is essentially claiming that we're not even asking for that area, then the legal description goes up to that sprinkler line and includes an area now, as I understand it, they're not even making a claim for.
Thank you very much. That takes us to the next case of the day, which is In Re Interest of Isabel P. I am recused from this matter, and Justice Wright will be presiding. The last case of the day is Holloway versus State. I am also recused in that case. Justice Wright is